March 18th, 2010. Now we have roll call.
Director Katz. Director Yaroslavsky.
Here.
Chair Najarian.
Here.
Quorum is present.
Thank you. What, is Mr. Leahy available? Okay. He can take a pass on that. Are the staff members here for item 33, Mr. Hamparian and Mr. Turner? We'll start. Mr. Turner is here.
Well, good morning, Mr. Chair and members. I would like to touch mainly on the recent actions relative to the gas tax, sales tax swap that was approved by the legislature but will now be vetoed by the governor. The proposal had four basic elements. First, the main version of the bill would swap the existing sales tax on gas for an increased excise tax. The second element of the bill would that it would allocate those resources to streets and highways, cities and counties for street and road repair, and would allocate a large amount of those funds for debt service on transportation bonds. That compares to Proposition 42 in the following ways. First, Proposition 42 allows funding to go to streets and roads, the STIP for streets for the state highway account, and to public transportation. So what this bill is doing is not allowing the money to go to public transit, but putting the money into debt service. The other two parts of the bill do address public transit by, number one, providing a $400 million allocation in the current year that would be available for expenditure in the current fiscal year and the next. And then the bill would retain the sales tax on diesel, which would be allocated to public transit. So that version, that portion of the bill would provide current year operating, current year funds for public transit operations, and then would provide an ongoing source of revenue for public transit beginning in the year, fiscal year 2012. So those are the main portions of the bill. There was one element that would have allowed regional agencies and local agencies like ours to pursue a fee on gasoline sales linked to SB 375 implementation. That has not been included in the version that was sent to the governor. I would say it's less of a priority for us because we've already taken significant steps to implement local resources through Measure R, and might be something we could use in the future, but in terms of everything else in the package, that's probably lower on our priority list. But as of this point, the governor has said he's going to veto that package. We understand from legislative leaders that they intend to bring that package back in substantially the same form as it was sent to the governor, along with a number of the other measures that he requested related to things not having to do anything with transportation. And at this point, we're trying to gauge whether or not that's something that happens in the very near future or something that happens in the regular budget process that that rolls out in the spring and summer of this year. So that's basically where the package stands. As I mentioned, although the governor will veto this package, we expect to see it come back in substantially the same form sometime later this year. The other thing I just want to touch on is that the legislature has passed the deadline to introduce bills. We've gone through all the bills that have been introduced, and we'll be bringing the first set of bills for position by the board to the board for consideration in the April cycle. And, Mr. Chairman, that concludes my report.
Thank you. Any questions for Mr. Turner on the state side? Let's go to Mr. Hamparian.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I have about nine items I'd like to review with respect to federal affairs, and then I'd be happy to get interrupted at any point for questions on any of these topics. First, I want to share with you the earmark situation in Washington, D.C. Last week, two things happened over in the House of Representatives. The House Democratic Caucus, led by a suggestion by Dave Obey, the chairman of the Appropriations Committee, said that all earmarks for for-profit entities will be banned. The following day, the Republican caucus, led by Eric Cantor, said that they are going to ban all earmarks across the board, irrespective of whether they're for for-profit or non-for-profit. The following day, the Senate responded by saying, we're wholly disinterested in what the House is doing. We are going to continue to earmark. And that charge was led in a bipartisan fashion by Daniel Inouye, the chair of the Committee on Appropriations, and Thad Cochran, who is the ranking Republican. And so, in effect, the Senate is going to continue earmarking. The House Republicans are not, and House Democrats will continue to earmark, but not for not-for-profit entities. And so if there are any questions on earmarks, I'd be happy to answer them. How it impacts us, we have a number of earmarks that we've submitted for Republican members of the Los Angeles County Congressional Delegation. In effect, we have received emails saying that our requests are no longer I don't want to say valid, but they'll no longer be pursued by those offices. Second, I want to address the extension of Safety Lou. Earlier this week, the Senate moved to adopt legislation known as the HIRE Act. In that HIRE Act, it includes a lot of tax benefits for hiring employees, but tucked in there was an extension of Safety Lou through December 31st, 2010. It transfers $19.5 billion from the general fund into the Highway Trust Fund. It restores rescinded funds. It provides $4.6 billion in Build America bonds, which is a financial mechanism this board may want to consider in the future. And it also provides for a healthy option, which is that the Highway Trust Fund can now secure interest on deposits. Most funds, trust funds set up by the federal government can collect interest on deposits. The Highway Trust Fund historically has not, and so that's a good development, and it's something that we had supported. The CNG tax issue, we've talked about it before. A number of directors have been interested in this topic. It's worth about $20.4 million for this agency. The Senate acted on the CNG bill. It's over in the House. I would expect that it's going to be adopted sometime in April. The good news here is that there's a retroactivity clause in the legislation, meaning that we can start the collections January 1, 2010. Prospects for a six-year authorization bill. Things changed considerably this week. Senator Barbara Boxer, in an address to representatives of Access DC and statewide transportation agencies, said it is her intention to move on a six-year bill this year. This is a big change, and it's something that we have got to and will be prepared for, because previously the administration had articulated and Senator Boxer had concurred that no six-year bill would move prior to the November 2010 elections. It appears that between Oberstar and Boxer, they may be moving a bill to the White House. And now we can all speculate what the White House would do with such a bill, but my guess is such a bill moves with a veto-proof majority to the White House. Potential for a second stimulus bill. You'll remember that late last year, the House passed $37.3 billion infrastructure package. That died in the Senate. I would expect within 2-3 months we may see the second stimulus bill arise in the Senate. And initially we had done some numbers on the House bill that was adopted on December 16, 2009, and that would deliver about $700 million for our agency. Next topic, if you're in Washington, D.C. this week, it was and you're a fan of mobility efforts in Los Angeles County, there was a lot of heartening news. A lot of people were talking about our mobility system. They were talking about our highway system, our goods movement system. They were talking about PTC. They were talking about efforts to accelerate transit projects. There was a lot of dialogue, and that was associated with a trip led by the Los Angeles Area Chamber of Commerce, joined by Redondo Beach and dozens of other chambers. And individuals from the public sector, private sector, there are union folks there, just about everyone. A bunch of nonprofits were there, and that was heartening. Tiger 2, we had a Tiger process last year. There's going to be a second phase that's going to play out. There's going to be the rules of the road that are going to be issued by the USDOT within about a month or two. And I'd expect some of the apportionments, some of the announcements on where the money's going to be made by September. There's $600 million, and this was included in the fiscal year 2010 appropriations bill. Watch for climate change. It's on the move. There's this broad deal between Lindsey Graham and Senator Kerry, basically a climate change nuclear bill. and I think the prospects for that are increasing. And last, we have talked previously about reforming of the New Starts program and with respect to the weighting of cost effectiveness. I expect in short order for there to be a notice of advance proposed rulemaking, ANPR, probably within maybe a month on how the administration intends to go forward on this, and then there'd be basically a year-long process where they'd figure out how this rule would actually work and how it would impact our transit projects. And something we're closely following. I have been directed by our CEO to track this very carefully. Our CEO has written a letter to the Secretary of Transportation requesting that any hearing on this matter, field hearing, be held in this boardroom so that we have a front seat in the process of the FTA crafting new rules with respect to the New Starts program. And with that, that concludes my remarks. And if there are any questions, I'd be happy to field them.
Dr. Katz.
Where are we on the procurement of the federal lobbyists? Rafi can't do it all by himself. I'm just, don't interpret my comment that way. Just
understood, sir. I know well what you mean. I was there in the last week as well for Mobility 21, and then the Chambers Access DC, and also the APTA annual. So we took occasion of this for Rafi and Paul and I to interview the firms. We interviewed all of the proposing firms a couple of days ago. And we've not yet reassembled to mark up scores and things like that, but we're doing some checks. And so hopefully, in the very near future, we'll come back with a recommendation. There's still some hope for the March board meeting. Our goal is.
Director Knappy.
Some of the feedback that I was getting, it's, you know, a little negative impact that we don't, you know, that we're not locked in. And
our goal is to try to get a board report out tomorrow.
And I think making up generally for the lack of a coordinated lobbying effort is multiple trips directors have taken from the mayor to directors Ridley Thomas, Antonovich, myself, Fasana, and others. We were accompanied with staff this week, and we really tried to make our presence known and let everyone know that we're still there, we're still interested, we're still going to be involved in any efforts that Congress or the administration takes in moving transportation projects.
I think one good example is the day before last, there was a meeting that the CEO and the chairman had with the Senate Banking Committee on the Rail Modernization Program. If we're able to make some progress on that, that could likely bring anywhere between $30 to $40 million every year to our agency, in addition to the $40 million we get every year. So there's the stakes in Washington are very, very high.
Very good. I have a request to speak from Dr. Clyde Williams.
Dr. Clyde Williams, El Sereno, Northeast LA. Quite concerned regarding the CEQA judicial review exemption and as to how MTA will be dealing with that. There's also a matter that there's a proposed sale of the Caltrans 710 corridor housing properties. Who's it going to be sold to? This is a central issue that's been on the books for a long time in Northeast LA, South Pasadena, and Pasadena. Will they be sold to individuals who are there now occupying the properties? Will it be sold to the highest bidder? Will it be sold to MTA? Where is it going? Can MTA assure us that the housing will go to individuals who are there now under accordance with the Roberti bill? Or is it going to be sold to special interests or to somebody else? And then where's the money going to go? The money should go to those communities that have suffered from the 710 corridor properties for the last 40 years. Thank you.
Thank you. I have no other speaker cards on this issue. This is a receive and file. With a motion and a second, if there's no objections, this item is received. Let's go back up to number 32, the report of the Chief Executive Officer. Thank you, Rafi and
Mr. Chair, I'm pleased to report that, as you know, we've received a $300,000 grant from the MSRC Mobile Source Air Pollution Reduction Review Committee to run service from Union Station to Dodger Stadium. It'll be called the Dodger Stadium Express. The Dodgers have agreed to co-market this with the MTA, co-market the Dodgers, along with MTA rail and bus lines. They'll be doing things like having ads in their programs. They're going to show a Tommy Lasorda video at games promoting the service. The service will run from here, make two stops up into the stadium, and run before and after the game. We've had Blue Line out ambassadors out on the Blue Line this week, especially at the locations where there have been pedestrian accidents, trying to increase pedestrian safety. With that, I'll conclude my report.
Thank you. I have no cards on this item. I personally don't have the cards. I was sort of referring to the clerk. Oh, we just pulled this out of the trash. Mr. John Walsh. Luckily, the shredder wasn't plugged in.
That's right. The reason you have the ambassadors out there is you've had 15 pedestrian accidents since it opened, more than anything except the Blue Line. Remember the Blue Line opened without the Cyclops lights, without any kind of safety. 1990, I brought it up. You started killing people. That was 20 years ago. Everything I say always comes true. And I want you to know, HollywoodHighlands.org, there'll be a new post out on the weekend, and the number one story is the gates. You spent hundreds of millions of dollars, Mr. Katz. They're not going to lock the gates. You know why? Because Baca doesn't want the gates locked, because the sheriffs would have to show their access pass, and then we'd know where the sheriffs are, and the sheriffs and Baca are filing false reports and where the saying the sheriffs are here and there and collecting money that they're not shouldn't be given. That's why the L.A. Times isn't going to do this story, because the L.A. Times is more interested in this little girl, this little lady, and having sex with her.
Thank you.
That's Bloom Katz.
Thank you, Mr. Walsh. I don't have any other cards, do I, on item 32? Thank you. Okay, let's move on to the consent calendar. And on the consent calendar, I wanted to first make a statement as to item 34. I did have a discussion with our legal counsel, Mr. Safer, earlier, prior to the meeting, and he indicated that although these rules and procedures that we've developed are fine, he would like to, to justify or coordinate them against the administrative code and any other applicable state law that may apply. I would not like to pull this. I don't want to pull this off, but I'm going to invite Mr. Safer to come back to the full board meeting with perhaps any strikeouts or additions that he feels necessary that are either redundancies that our procedures have that are addressed in the code, or any conflicts which would obviously create a problem. We can't develop anything that's contrary to the state code. So that being said, there are cards. There certainly are. I have a card from John Walsh. Any other cards submitted? All I have is Mr. Walsh's at this point. 34. That's why I'm asking. I don't see yours.
Does anybody here know who Ralph M. Brown was? He was from Fresno. He was a senator from Fresno, state senator. All of the famous politicians of the era of the 50s are totally forgotten. Who remembers Goody Knight? They're all forgotten. Even Brown's father is Jerry Brown's father. But the only person whose name lives forever is this obscure senator, because he gave us the right to speak. Okay? And his name will be on people's lips 100 years from now. And as far as I'm telling you, you have these meetings. They're supposed to start at 10:30. They start at maybe 11 o'clock. You can't come up here and just fill in with public comment. You can't have public comment unless the meeting has begun. unless there is a quorum. Those are the rules. Those are the rules in the city of Los Angeles. And, you know, we're always interested in de-escalating. Well, I just want things to be run as nicely as they are at Glendale. I haven't been to Glendale City Council meeting, but I understand they're run very well. And if you play your cards right, I never will go to Glendale.
I can assure you, things are very smooth. You'd be proud, Mr. Walsh.
I think you should go there.
No. Out of order. Out of order. Out of order.
All right, don't push your line.
Out of order. And please, is there another card, Madam Clerk? There isn't. Please come and identify yourself and fill out a card after you speak.
My name is Malcolm Klugman. I wanted to propose this as for the procedure of the board to then be brought to the full board. And it's in section 2.4, if you can look on the thing. And it talks about material being provided to you. And I wanted to add a substantial number of copies of any written material to be debated by committees or the full board shall be provided to meeting attendees prior to its introduction, so that people here know what's being debated because they have copies themselves they can look at before it's done. And I saw earlier today somebody passed something around just to you guys and just to the staff, and without it being available to the people to see what's being talked about.
Okay, thank you. Is there anyone else who wishes to address this item, but whose card was not received or identified? Okay, thank you. And are there any comments by the board? Committee members? Is there a motion? With a second by Director Kanabe, if I may be so bold, and with no objection, this item will be approved. Item 35. Are there any comments? Mr. Walsh.
It's almost 3 years you don't have an IG here. At the Community College Board of Trustees is now instituting an IG because of my website. Mickey Jackson and my website is the reason they're having an IG over it. Go check it out. We've been talking about, they have no IG there. They'll have one now. Karen Gorman, incidentally, look, she is in your rules. They have one sentence on what the ethics office does, keep a file. You have five or six pages. She is not worthy, and she doesn't have the credentials to be an IG. She's investigating Andrea Orden, who just arrived. Andrea Orden, the county council, should be investigating her, should be investigating the mayor. You know, I gave you my word, and my word is my bond. I'm going to be a little easier, Mr. Councilman Najarian, on the mayor, because it's your living room. But listen. It's just a matter of time before the mayor is indicted. HollywoodHighland.org, 380,000 hits since September 3rd.
Any comments from the committee members? I would like to see a, Mr. Leahy, I'd like to see a permanent position filled at the IG level. Don't think it's really for a organization of our stature. I think we should have a permanent member selected to hold that position. And I know Ms. Gorman has done a great job filling basically two jobs, doing two jobs at the same time. And I'm not sure that's entirely fair to her either. So if we could start the process rolling, I know there's some ways to do that.
Mr. Chair, as you know, the ethics officer and the inspector general, along with general counsel and the secretary report and the CEO to the board, what might be appropriate would be to come back next month with some options, or I can just tell you what they might be in terms of how you might proceed. You could have MTA staff do a recruitment, You could hire a recruiter reporting to MTA staff, or you could hire a recruiter reporting to the board of directors, and then proceed.
Why don't we bring that to the board? And I'm sure there's going to be many different opinions as to how best to fill that and to whom that person should be reporting. And if we just can air it out, I'm sure we'll come to a logical decision.
March, or would you like me to do this in March, or would you prefer April, or how would you like to do it?
Well, we're too late for March. So 72 hours is all we need for this. Will it require an extensive report, or just a
one or two-page report?
Why don't we? I mean, if there's no objection, I think that would be a good thing, at least put it in front of us and then...
Mr. Chair, I believe that is scheduled as per a closed session item in March for next week.
Oh, it's already scheduled?
Yes, sir.
There you go.
Okay.
Thank you. Is there a motion to receive and file? Second? Okay, with no objections, we will receive the Inspector General's report. Let's go to item 36.
Good morning. I'm Warren Morris from Communications. Item 36 asks the board to consider amending our advertising policy to permit advertising for beer and wine products in order to generate additional revenue. We receive a substantial amount of revenue from our bus and rail advertising contracts, and we can generate an additional $1.5 million over the next 3 years if we amend the policy. Our current policy has a broad prohibition of all advertising for all alcohol and tobacco products. Beer and wine is a subset of the larger alcohol category, and it's accepted on about 85% of the bus shelters in the county. So currently there's beer and wine ads can be seen at the bus stops that our vehicles serve, but not on our vehicles themselves. Our advertising vendor has offered to split the additional revenue that would be generated if beer and wine advertising were permitted on our system. They estimate we would receive about an additional $500,000 a year, or a total of $1.5 million over the remaining 3 years of their contract. By the way, other cities where beer and wine advertising is permitted on transit systems include New York, Chicago, Boston, Philadelphia, Washington, D.C., Cleveland, and Louisville. So if the board chooses to amend the policy, the vendor would begin selling this category of advertising, and the additional revenue would be paid to us as it is generated on a monthly basis. So that concludes my report, and if I can answer any questions, I'll be happy to.
Questions? Director Yevzovsky?
First of all, is this would be an amendment to the to an existing contract that we have?
That's correct.
Kind of a master advertiser kind of. Who's the contract with?
CBS Outdoor is our contract.
So they handle all of our advertising?
That's correct.
And what is the split that we get from them on all of our current advertising?
The current contract is on a fixed revenue basis. So it's not a revenue share. We get a fixed amount.
Okay. So if you were to projected as a revenue split, what percentage of what we get based on the agreement do they get, and what percent do we get?
I would guess right now we are probably getting somewhere around 80% or maybe more.
So why would we only? Why would you recommend? Or why would they? I know why they would recommend, but why would we accept only 50% if we were going to do this? Why wouldn't we want the same breakdown, the breakout that we get from all the other advertising?
Well, when we got proposals on the advertising contracts, on the current contract, we asked the vendors to propose two ways. We asked them to propose on a revenue share basis, and we asked them to propose on a fixed revenue basis. And when we analyzed the proposals, we felt it was in the best interests of Metro to go with the fixed revenue.
You're not answering my question. We are now, grant you that you didn't always ask the question, so I'll give you some space. But if we're getting 75 or 80% of the revenues from the current advertising, however it is arrived at, that's what we're getting. For every dollar that is generated, we're getting 80 cents of it. Why would we only settle for 50 cents of it? And by the way, why do we have to go through them? If we wanted to do this, why couldn't we just ask Schlitz or, you know, whoever. I guess Schlitz doesn't.
Schlitz.
Oh.
let me go back.
We're out of Pabst.
Let me really blow your mind. Blatt's beer. The beer that made Milwaukee famous. Can't even sing the old Dodger advertisement jingle.
And look where Milwaukee is today.
Yeah. Wisconsin has a professional football team, don't they? and a transit system. Seriously, if you have, why couldn't we do it ourselves and get 100% of the revenue?
Well, because we've licensed this out to CBS Outdoor. They sell.
We license what out? Every advertisement?
Right.
They retain the right to control all the advertising. We can't do it on our own.
We've given them the exclusive right to sell the ad space. Yeah.
When does the contract end?
3 years.
Right.
3 years.
3 years from
what? Second question I had was, what other cities in California allow beer and wine advertising on their transit vehicles?
To my knowledge, there aren't any others in California that permit it.
No others? You mean none at all, since we don't allow it either?
As correct.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Okay. I really, I don't know if you want to, what you plan to do with this. I've got a, for the amount of money you're talking about, for us to be the first in California to advertise alcoholic beverages on our buses, rubs me the wrong way. That's all. Prolong the discussion.
Director Katz.
I share some of the supervisor's concerns also, particularly with the, you know, I don't mind setting precedents. I'm not sure this is what I want to set on that. Let me ask you, kind of maybe outside the bailiwick of this contract, but I'd much rather explore, frankly, naming rights at station locations and things like that to generate revenue before I'd go alcohol on buses. Would that be through the same contract, or would we do that separately if we wanted to go after naming rights, you know?
Schlitz station?
That would be the old abandoned station, yeah. It would be the Schlitz station, the one in Milwaukee. But
naming rights would be a totally different pursuit. We have not given that. We have not licensed that out to anyone.
Because I agree with the supervisor in terms of, I mean, I think part of why we did licensing and part of why we took the fixed piece was that we weren't sure how much revenue would be generated, and that way you get a guarantee of something versus 100% of nothing, I guess was the theory at that point.
Exactly.
How many years have we been doing this now with CBS?
The current contract we're just in the third year of the contract. It started the third year of the contract. CBS and its predecessors, because they've had mergers, was probably 25 years or so that we've had contracts with them.
So that contract will be coming up again next year, next fiscal year, or sooner?
It ends in, let's see, 10, 11, 12. It ends at the end of calendar year 2012.
How come? I thought you said we're in the third year of a three-year contract.
A five-year contract, sorry.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Five-year contract.
Okay. Could we, I'll tell you one thing, and whoever are the appropriate way to do it, I would like to take a look at naming rights on and to see if there's interest out there in doing that. You know, maybe HollywoodHighland.org will buy the naming rights for the station up there. You know, maybe, you know, they've got so many more hits than Zeb does. Maybe they can afford it. I don't know. But, you know, I mean, look, we're talking about fare reductions. We're talking about service reductions. You know, I'm not big on the alcohol. I don't like the press of the alcohol thing. But we got to do, you know, but it comes down to that, or, you know, if this money can all, I mean, one first question would be that it can all the money from this be dedicated only to operations, number one. And I assume that would probably be yes, just given, because this is a straight out cash, not federal this or state that. The second would be I'd like to know and ask maybe the communications group to take a look at naming rights and how we go about doing that for various locations.
Will do.
Dr. Knabe? Do you have any comments? I have a request to speak from John Walsh.
Chairman, as he's coming up, a comment. I think apropos of this discussion a year from now, whenever we're going to start re-procuring on this contract, we ought to come back to the board at the start and say, here's some issues. Give us some direction so that we might be able to find other ideas that we might experiment and explore.
This is a rare time when the board has seen reason. We don't want signs And this is a rap on the knuckles of Leahy for even bringing this up. So you probably killed this, so there'll be no bad publicity on this, the alcohol choo-choo. And I just want you to know, as far as HollywoodHighlands.org, Hollywood Highlands is near bankruptcy. Every month to month, it's near bankruptcy. And I like to finish by saying that we get, as I said, many more than Hollywood Highlands. In fact, I'll show you, we have 5,000 failed requests. In other words, we have more failed requests, people who put the wrong website on, than Zev has successful requests.
Yeah, well, we have high-quality requests.
Oh, yeah?
Thank you, Mr. Wash. Thank you.
You're getting nasty now, Zev.
Oh, you...
And I'm a Jew like you.
Thank you. No, Mr. Wash, let's
excuse me, point of personal privilege. That's Mr. Yaroslavsky. You don't point at me and talk about Mr. Yaroslavsky.
Okay, my thoughts on this item is I do see some... I have some personal objections to... But I do have some personal objections to alcohol advertising. I think much of it nationally is targeted to minority groups. I think it encourages a behavior that is not productive during certain hours of the day, at least. And you know, and that the type, and I don't think we can regulate the content. In other words, if we said we will permit Schlitz to endorse a message such as drink responsibly, let Metro be your designated driver, we can't restrict in that regard. First Amendment, that they've got to be able to I mean, to me, that's the only type of message that I would accept with some sort of, you know, corporate logo on the face of it, but I don't think we can restrict it in that regard, can we, Mr. Safer?
This would be commercial speech, so there, you know, we could make, you know, various restrictions. We're talking about, you know, commercial speech. Like we're putting it on a public forum, so that, you know, the side of the bus or whatever,
right,
public forum. So it becomes a complicated issue.
Right. Let me.
It looks like I've raised some
chair,
questions.
If you'd like,
Mr. Leahy, then Director Kanavi. Or Director Kanavi first.
You know, I don't know what the legal ramifications are or parameters, but I mean, for $1.5 million is not worth the heartache. Trust me, we've been through this in lifeguard towers and everything else. So.
Mr. Chair, can we get some money from Schlitz just for having brought their name up?
I think so. They owe us.
Mr. Chair, if you like, we'll explore the issue of along the lines of what you've outlined. I should say on behalf of Warren, Matt and I discussed this a month ago. We all knew this would be something that may not be acceptable at the time. And I made the decision to proceed with the recommendation based on the principle that, given all the indications to you that we are making about our budget, that we wanted to show by word and deed that we're doing everything we can to generate revenue, and we'll continue to do so, even though we knew the outcome was probably not going to be a positive one.
I think we appreciate the general discussion, at the very least.
Yeah, you should not feel constrained to bring ideas forward.
Yes, sir. Thank you. So 36 will fail for lack of motion. Item 37.
Or would you prefer a motion to receive and file item 36?
Your pleasure to keep it at least...
That's what I think receiving file would do. So I maneuver receiving file. Recommendation.
Receiving file would take it to the...
Or reject the recommendation. Is that better?
Okay. A motion to reject the recommendation.
Yeah, that would be the recommendation of the board.
Okay. So a motion to reject and a second in all favor of that motion.
Aye.
Okay, thank you. Item 37.
Hello, my name is David Sutton. I'd like to request the approval of a $2.4 million five-year contract for rideshare services. These are basically bilingual teleservices, assistance for ride matching, park and ride lot location, and vanpool placement. It also manages the database for that, and we offer business assistance in compliance with air quality regulations and helping businesses promote rideshare opportunities. It also manages an incentive program that increases and retains rideshare participation. We've seen this program grow over the years, and our average vehicle ridership for businesses has grown as well, from 1.35 in fiscal year 07 to 1.45 in fiscal year 09. We do about 606 AVR surveys per year, and this is up from last year from 513. We provide services for 1,860 work sites, of which over 1,700 are incentive program work sites. About 27,000 people participate in our incentive program, and we receive about 750 calls a month, which spike up to 1,100 or 1,200 a month when the gas prices increase. And also, this is a lifeline service that when we do have disruptions in transit services, this is a last resort phone call for most people to try to get to work during these times. So it's a vital service that we're providing. It's also a regional service. We provide this service in partnership with four other counties. We have about 105,000 active participants in the rideshare database at any time, looking for ride matches, or they've received ride matches, or they're looking for van pools. Thank you.
Are there any cards on this item?
Yeah.
Okay. And so it's our number. When you see those signs, I recall seeing
well, you're
for
seeing
rideshare it, info.
You're probably seeing 1-800-COMMUTE, which goes into this teleservices
comes in.
Okay. Option number three.
Any questions or comments from the directors? Okay. And this is a good price, Mr. Leahy?
It's a competitive price. It was bid on by two groups. The group that originally got it currently has it, got it again. And it's a very economical program. It includes six full-time people and two part-time people, and we've required those people to be present at our work site here so we can supervise them closely.
Very good.
The options, I assume, are exclusively at our discretion?
The options to renew?
Yeah.
Yes.
I mean, it's not an evergreen where it automatically kicks 1 year at the end for...
No, we have to go back to procurement and tell them that we want to continue it.
And then that'll come to the board to continue?
It doesn't come to the board, no. This would be, your approval would be giving me the authorization to continue it every year, or giving the CEO that privilege.
If there's cost overrun on this, that comes to the board.
Yeah, and there would not be a cost overrun. As a matter of fact, with the mid-year adjustment that we did and the end-of-the-year adjustment that we're doing now for next year, we're looking at actually probably not continuing some of these services, and we have that written into the agreement.
Okay. Is there a motion? Is there a second?
Second.
There's no objections. This item will be approved. Item 38.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, I'm here to report back to you as requested by a motion initiated by this committee last November to look at ways of improving MTA's policies, practices, and organizational structure to ensure successful Measure R project delivery. To assist complying with the motion, the CEO has obtained strategic advisory services from PB Americas, represented today by Eric Rokes. PB was given 9 tasks to perform, and their interim report, as directed by the motion, is before you today. As set forth in the motion, the staff formed an industry peer review and advisory group. The group consists of private sector companies that provide transportation, construction services, like architecture and engineering, construction management, and construction contracting. This group will continue and advise the CEO on potential changes to MTA's procurement policies and processes that will speed up overall project delivery. The group's initial deliberations have been taken into account by PB in their work to date, and they'll continue to do so. And with that, I'd like to ask Mr. Roakes to give you his interim report. Eric?
Thank you, Paul. Good morning. It's a pleasure to be here. There are four things I'd like to go over with you this morning, and I will try to keep my comments brief so we can get to questions. First, I'd like to recap our assignment. Second, I'd like to provide you with an overview of our approach, really how we're doing the work. Third, I'd like to share some of the initial emerging themes that we're starting to see. And fourth, I would like to outline our steps forward. Where do we go between now and June? I plan on only touching a few of our slides, and I look forward to questions when I'm finished. Let me start off first by talking a little bit about our assignment. As Mr. Taylor had said, we really had nine tasks that we focused on. The first was the industry peer review. The next were procurement, construction, audit, program project management, CEQA, NEPA, really taking a look at the policies and procedures in those areas, taking a look at some organizational structure issues around program delivery, and finally, funding options. As you can see on the slide ahead of us, really this all started with the board motion in December on the 10th. We are responsible from that in order to provide today's status report, as well as a final report, which is really where you'll see our content, our recommendations and thoughts on June 1st. Again, the focus was on how do we accelerate getting toward Measure R.
How do we accelerate getting this before June 1st?
The report?
Yeah.
We are working as fast as we can. So
we're talking about building 10 mass transit, 12 mass transit projects in 10 years. You guys can't, this is as fast as you guys can do a report. Paul's not going to answer that question.
That's
for
all right.
You.
That's what I want to take a look at.
It was a nice try, but Paul's not going.
Chairman and Director Katz, let me say that we are working hand in glove with PB, and we've already started, and I'd like to elaborate at the end of Eric's remarks on what we're already doing to begin the process of preparing to excel. And we're not waiting until the recommendations from PB are complete.
Well, and let me add to that if I could. We're already starting to see a number of improvements and folks looking at what we're talking about, especially around procurement. So when we're talking with the industry members especially, we're starting to see some of those thoughts being reflected throughout the organization. So we continue to work with staff in what we're coming up with. And always when we do a project like this and a review like this, as consultants, we are hoping that even before a report comes out, we're going to start to see some of the impact, and I think we are. So that would be how I would see us starting to answer that question.
As part of your research, have you accessed the folks? There were two meetings that the mayor held with contractors and subcontractors and firms that do a lot of business with this agency. And I know the second meeting, I think both Art and Paul were at, at least Art was. I don't know if Paul was there, in terms of suggestions about how to streamline processes. So, I mean, there were two or three meetings. I think Jerry Givens was at both of them from PB, and Morales was at one of them also. So some of your folks have been there. There's a whole bunch of data there about that seems like it might make it easier and quicker to get this done if you go back over some of that stuff, because those were two sessions that each lasted 3 hours, I think, about how to expedite this process from the standpoint of the folks that have to deliver projects and deal with this agency. So that's a thought if you haven't gone looked at that.
Absolutely. We have taken a look at that information and are already starting to consider that. One of the things you will see in the presentation we have today is you'll see that we're starting to put in a lot of our thoughts already, but we're very cautious in wanting to be able to come up with the firm and solid recommendations until we have fully verified that everything we have found, whether it be in industry or here at MTA, is indeed the right direction for MTA for our recommendations. But stand assured that we are pushing as fast as we can to get those conclusions together. Would you like me to continue? You bet. Did I answer your question? Great. Okay, fair enough. Really, our approach today, we're following a three-pronged approach, what I like to think of as primary research, secondary research, and analysis. Let me tell you what I mean by those. Primary research is really focused on more the traditional approach in doing a consulting project such as this, where we'll be conducting interviews with folks here at MTA as well as with industry experts. We're also starting to compile some of our recommendations. And then, as you had just mentioned, the whole idea of other meetings that have already occurred, including our industry advisory groups, taking that information in as one of our first steps in really getting a handle on what the processes, procedures, policies are today, as well as what we understand the best ones to be in industry. Then we're going really what I like to think is the next, going the next mile, the extra mile on the secondary research. We have been accessing a number of reports that are out there from industry, whether it be from AASHTO, TRB, APTA, USDOT, over 20 sources, as well as our own experts, in order to take it that next level and that next level of detail. Finally, the most important part is the analysis. We have started doing some of the analysis based on what we know. Again, working closely with staff to talk about what we're coming up with and our thoughts. We are putting those recommendations together as we speak. Questions on the approach?
I mean, it's pretty comprehensive, and I think just to go on the comments of Director Katz, I think there, I think that this original motion was generated out of an urgency to, on the part of both the public and this board, to get projects moving as quickly as possible and to be ready for any sudden influx of $10 billion, which we may be receiving from various sources. So. I appreciate it's very in-depth, but I think we're very concerned with the timing and the what's done is done. But moving forward, we're really looking for some expediency in this plan.
As certainly as we are able, and if we can get the report concluded sooner, that would certainly be our goal, too. We think it's very important to be able to get Measure R moving as quickly as we can, as soon as we can.
Okay.
Very fair. Other comments?
Why don't you continue?
I will. As I had mentioned, the third part I want to talk about were the themes. There are four really large themes that we have picked up from our industry review meetings, and they also tend to be running through all of our analysis. One is really taking a look at consistency of policies, procedures, practices. When we think about delivering a capital program such as Measure R, what is that looking like? How are we thinking through risk and its allocation? How best can we streamline the policies and processes? And finally, how do we really partner with the private sector in being able to deliver Measure R? Those are the major themes we got out of the two advisory committee meetings. They're also the themes that are driving through much of our research. Taking a look now at task two, I'm just going to briefly touch on each of our tasks in light of the themes I just raised. One of the things that we have really identified and are honing in on when it comes to procurement policies and procedures, a lot of it has to do with risk transfer as well as really optimizing policies and procedures. There are a number of areas that we are bringing in as best practices, whether they be regional agencies, whether they be national agencies, whether they be different types of organizations. We're just making sure we're covering the waterfront and all of those are being picked up on. Thinking about task three, which is really focused on metro construction, a couple things here of interest. Our interest is making sure that there's true integration going on when we think about the policy and the organizational side. What do agreements look like with regard to pre-construction? Do we have a well-defined program management plan? What does that look like? Procurement, like I said, we're starting to see some procurement improvements along the way. We also are continuing to look at the policies in that area. Construction methods and approach, really, what are some of the different alternative delivery methods? How would they apply here? How would they help rocket us ahead? Task four, it talks about audit. Here, we really are looking a lot at the thresholds for audits. We also are working very closely with staff on this. There is a lot to dig into on this particular issue. Task five, really program project management systems. Here again, we take a look at the existence of a program management plan, how it's structured, and ongoing assessment of delivery. In terms of thinking about the project management approach itself, what types of broad approaches are we considering, whether it be cradle to grave or some other options? How are our program and project managers skilled? And what are some of our best ways for reporting and tools for doing that? Task six, CEQA and NEPA. Here, a lot of focus around the status of environmental schedules. I understand that there was some action around PMIS earlier this morning. That is a great step, and we look forward to coordinating our thoughts around that. Task seven, again, this is a very challenging area to look at, one we really are spending time on, and that is really what type of organizational unit or units are best for managing Measure R going forward. There are four or five different options. We're carefully looking at each of those, and we'll come back with some really strong detailed recommendation around that. Task 8, organizational changes. The big push here from our perspective is really thinking about the paradigm shift, about understanding that we can't do business as usual going forward if we want to be successful with Measure R. So we're continuing to look at, are there other structural changes or capacity that we could be looking at to recommend and help with that area. Finally, Task 9, we have Jeff Morales, Mort Downey helping us on this. This is really trying to do a lot of leveraging what we do now and do that well, taking a look at some of the legislative changes that may be out there that can help us ensure that we can bring the goods home on Measure R across the board. I'll conclude with this slide. The last slide is really talking about what do we do over the next 1 to 2 months, and a very clear message from this group, can you do it sooner? That really includes us focusing more on additional interviews as we need to, continuing to work with our partners in industry and any insight they may have, continuing to work with staff and putting improvements in place and taking a look at what we're coming up with, and finally compiling that into a report that is actionable and something that can be moved ahead. That concludes my comments. I wanted to address your questions.
Yeah. All right.
Mr.
Yeah. The only, going back, well, can I get? I'd like to get a copy of that PowerPoint, please.
Absolutely.
If I could get somebody to send that to me, I would appreciate it. Second, the reason I'm pushing so hard on acceleration of the acceleration study is that it'll take time after we get your conclusions to implement the conclusions as well, mm-hmm. And you know, and we're trying to move this on a much faster track, and I know that's what. You know, our CEO had in mind when did the contract with you guys. You know, we need to get more of these projects out the door faster. And I think this makes, it's a smart first step to do the analysis and gather the data. I just want to make sure that doesn't get, you know, sort of bogged down also, because again, time is, it's not only money in here, but it's credibility more importantly with the voters. And with the, you know, November is the 2-year anniversary of Measure R. And I want to have, I mean, I think all of us want to have much more happening out there than just the Canoga extension, which as important as it is, you know, is just one relatively, it's a small project by Measure R standards. So, you know, we need, you know, the product of your work as expeditiously as possible so we can then translate the staff and, you know, the executive staff can translate the changes around here. So,
no. Mr. Taylor.
Mr. Chairman, to pick up on Director Katz's suggestion, I'd like to, with your permission, spend a couple minutes talking about what we are doing to prepare ourselves. We've been working closely with PB and understanding where they're coming from. So we have taken a number of steps. In the area of industry, we have formed a joint committee with the Associated General Contractors that will be meeting on a
on a quarterly basis to talk about any issues and upcoming work so that the contracting community can be prepared to the maximum extent possible. Also, our broader industry advisory group will be continuing. As you've heard from the CEO, he's proposing to form a directorate for program responsibility within the agency that is comparable to our directorate for operations of our transit system. Within that directorate, we'll have units for planning, engineering, and construction that will be lined up to move these projects along. We'll also be instituting a new management office of project management, which will be responsible for developing and monitoring the project management plans to make sure everything moves along. And we'll be also establishing a new thing for MTA, a cradle-to-grave project management process where a single person is identified as the project manager at the outset of a project, and he or she is responsible to take it all the way to operations, and from planning to operations. It'll be a challenge to match up skills and experience for that, but we're working on that already, identifying people. As you know, the Measure R committee approved the project management information system this morning that will be rolled out expeditiously and will be tied in with our website so that the public will have a transparent view into what we're doing on Measure R projects. Finally, in the procurement area, which is probably the most important thing to get ahead on, we're looking at our contract documents. We got a lot of feedback from the community, the industry, on how our contract documents are not viewed as fair in their allocation of risk, and we're reevaluating that. We'll be emphasizing agreements with third parties, utilities and the like, to get ahead of utility work on projects. And we're restructuring our pre-qualification processes to expedite them, especially with regard to small businesses. And we are also moving ahead on the concept of pre-purchasing of equipment. And we're proposing that for both the Foothill Extension and for Exposition Line 2, where we would make an overall order of equipment that would be installed in those projects and have that ahead of the need on the project. So we're taking ideas from the PB work and beginning to act on them already.
Along that same line, Paul, are you also looking at the opportunity, I guess it's premature at this point because 3010 isn't funded, but if we get to that point that the board wants to go in that direction, will we look at bulk purchasing aggregate or steel or concrete
everything,
as well?
Everything we can get our hands on, yes.
Okay. Because that's something, I'm not sure any other transit agency has actually ever done that. And
I'm not aware of any that have done that, and I think we're learning what their challenges were that led them not to. We're hoping we can overcome those.
Yeah, and the other part is I don't think any of them have had a program like 3010 that puts that number of projects in play at the same time, so which is the other advantage. So I'm pleased that we're looking at taking advantage of, I don't know what kind of a Costco you go to for the stuff we all buy in that quantity, but that kind of a thought process I think might be helpful, saving some more bucks. Yeah.
I have several requests to speak, and then we'll come back to the directors again. John Walsh, followed by Dr. Clyde Williams, Gerard Wright. Third.
Projects in 10 years construction. It's madness. It's never been done before. We're going to have Subway from Hell times 12. That's what's going to happen. But here's the great part. During those 10 years, you're going to reduce operations by 5% each year, starting next year, starting this year. So you are reducing operations while you construct. I can see why you flunked out of law school. And what do you have? A hidden meeting with the mayor and all the contractors. And did you go around and pick up the checks? What is he running for now? He's not running for lieutenant governor. This agency created the subway from hell. Now you want to extend the subway from hell. But remember, I'm not your enemy. It's your hubris. You think You know, I remember when you were the most powerful person, Mr. Katz, on transportation. You killed voting. We were supposed to vote for this body.
Thank you, Mr. Walsh.
Destroying yourself.
Dr. Clyde Williams, followed by Gerard Wright.
Dr. Clyde Williams, El Sereno. Where are we going? I don't know, because the PMIS that was talked about this morning takes 2 years to implement. These guys are going to take you a lot longer than that to implement. What's going on? Eventually, in the old days we had a saying, consultants are based upon duration, contractors are based upon completion. Maybe consultants will continue this for a long time. They want a czar. They want a stakeholder panel. One of the questions is transparency. They also mentioned the word transparency in this document. Transparency of an industrial stakeholders panel. Why isn't there a full documentation as the minutes of the meetings, the interviews, and such like that online so that we can deal with it? Or better yet, have public representation within the panel so that there is real transparency and in a more timely fashion. You need it done in 6 months, not 6 years.
Thank you, Dr. Williams. Gerard Wright.
Good, happy afternoon to you all. Just one quick comment. I'm a big supporter of the 3010 plan, but there's one question that needs to be addressed while we're in the discussion and while we have the staging in place. Once 3010, if you get the funding and if you get the, all the ducks in a row and the stars aligned, what happens to the operations of these lines? We have 30 years of funding of operations, but can you accelerate 30 years of operations, in 10 years' time? I mean, that's a key question that needs to be addressed and find out a strategy of how you operate these systems. That's going to be critical because, I'm in big favor of capital projects being pushed forward in a timely fashion ahead of schedule, but there's going to be operation dollars that need to be looked at and really stressed because you will be operating said services, some of which, we desperately need, like the subway to Westwood, despite some comments, and others, they need some tinkering. So that's going to be a key question and a key concern. Period. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Any comments from Director Kanabe?
Just in regards to the gentleman's comments there, that's the missing link in the entire 3010 program or operational dollars. So, it does have to be addressed. It's a huge missing link.
Receive and file.
Thank you.
By Kanabe, second by Katz. No objections. This item is received. Okay, did you need to amend your remarks somewhere?
Yeah, just one quick addition to the CEO's report earlier. This morning, Contra Costa announces the hiring of the current Caltrans statewide chief, Randall Iwasaki, is leaving Caltrans and going to Contra Costa. And what this means is the last two statewide directors have left and gone to county commissions. I think what it really does is begin to indicate the sort of problems which we will be experiencing with Caltrans, and that is important that MTA track what's going on in Los Angeles to ensure we keep our projects moving. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Leahy. The last item on the action items is item 53. Mr. Leahy, do you want
to
discuss?
Obviously, need board authority to offer a salary higher than $175,000. Interviews were conducted about 10 days, 2 weeks ago for a number of candidates. It would be my intent to conclude that recruitment and make an offer to somebody. No offer has been made at the current time, but in order to proceed, I need to know whether or not the board would be willing to grant the authority. And I strongly recommend that you do approve the authority. I believe that the MTA needs to recruit at the very highest quality level. I think the MTA can and should be a national basis, an employer of choice, given the magnitude of our program here, both capital and operations. So that's my recommendation to the board. Thank you.
Any questions, discussion? Is there a second? Seems like a pretty high top range, but I guess if we're looking for national caliber operations, is really the key, one of the
patients. Mr. Chair, I should just note there are two very important jobs. This one and the chief planning officer position will probably come back and talk with you about next month. But I think it's imperative that we have the highest people of the highest quality in these positions given the magnitude of the task.
Okay. We have a motion and second. Any further discussion? Any objections to this item? This item passes. Any public discussion? General comments? John Walsh and Dr. Clyde Williams. Mr. Williams has left the room. Therefore, no additional business. This committee is adjourned.